The case of alleged mobster Whitey Bulger is fascinating, sensational, and complex. And this week provided more evidence of all of the above. Today, U.S. Magistrate Judge Jennifer Bowl is wrestling with the decision whether or not to release Catherine Gregg on bail. Gregg is Whitey Bulger's longtime girlfriend who spent 16 years with him on the lam, and she's charged with harboring a fugitive. In court yesterday, Judge Bowl allowed the family members of Bulger's alleged victims to testify against Gregg to make the case why she shouldn't be released. It was an unusual move by Judge Bowl. And to talk about how unusual, we're joined now by Allison Burroughs, a partner at McNutter, McLennan and Fish in Boston. She's also a former assistant U.S. attorney in Boston and Philadelphia who prosecuted organized crime cases. And Allison, thanks for coming in.
You're more than welcome. It's nice to be here.
What did you make of Judge Bowl's decision?
Well, I think the interesting thing is that the victims wanted to speak at this stage of the proceedings. Judges don't usually wrestle with this because the victims don't want to be heard until sentencing, where they can say, put the person in jail forever or be lenient, whatever it is they want to say. In this case, the statute is interesting. First of all, it gives victims a right to speak. So that needs to be a victim of Catherine Gregg's alleged crime, not a victim of Whitey Bulger's crime, since it's Catherine Gregg's detention hearing. Mm. The crime she's alleged to commit is harboring. So first of all, do you really have a victim of harboring?
Right. She has to figure out whether or not these relatives even qualify as Catherine Gregg's victims. So my question is, isn't it strange to allow them to speak and then say she would figure out if they're victims? I mean, it seems like it ought to be done the other way around.
Well, the decision that Magistrate Judge Bowl is making is whether Catherine Gregg is a risk of flight or a danger to the community. Mm-hmm. So if these people have evidence that's relevant to either one of those two issues, then they should be allowed to speak and she should hear them. I think her point is that she can't make a determination about whether what they have to say is relevant to one of those two issues until they've said it.
I see. Well, I want to read a passage from today's Boston Globe about this. It went like this. Thomas Donahue, whose father, Michael Donahue, was gunned down in 1982, had to stop several times to calm his rage and grief. Quote, while she was there tinting her hair, we laid awake at night sweating from the nightmares and shedding tears. If you let her out of here to go live with her father, it's a complete slap to the victims of Whitey Bulger. So can there even be a fair trial with that kind of emotion in the courtroom so soon in the proceedings?
Well, I'm sure that her defense attorneys are wrestling with the pros and cons of moving for a change of venue. You can move for a change of venue if you can make the case that a defendant can't get a fair trial in Massachusetts. Mm. It's an interesting weighing of different things, I think, because every time these victims speak, they're helping build the defense's case that they can't get a fair trial here. So the defense may well have decided to let that play out and just see how prejudicial it gets to be. And then when it's time to move for that change of venue, they can say they testified here, they testified there, they testified here. There can't be a juror in the greater Boston area that can be fair.
Hmm. Interesting. What else struck you about yesterday's proceeding?
It was also interesting to me, I think, that the government was advocating in favor of allowing these victims to speak. And the statute does require that the government do what it can to make sure that victims get their rights, which is the right to be reasonably heard. But because of the potential prejudice that the victims testifying can cause, I was interested that the government was sort of so aggressive in trying to get them heard. That decision might be a little short-sighted.
Mm. Now, we still don't know if Catherine Gregg will stay behind bars. As we mentioned, Judge Bowl needs to consider that. What does she have to take into account?
The two things that she is supposed to consider is whether or not the defendant is a risk of flight or a danger to the community. In this case, I think the danger to the community argument is a tough one to make. So I think this is all about risk of flight. And the question is she a risk of flight? On the one hand, electronic monitoring is pretty good. On the other hand, she has a demonstrated ability to live as a fugitive. I think that everyone's sort of supposition is that she knows where the cash is and has access to it. So I basically think it comes down to a risk of flight assessment.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming in and helping to explain this to us. We appreciate it.
Thanks. It was my pleasure.
Allison Burroughs is a partner at Nutter, McLennan and Fish in Boston. She was also a former assistant U.S. attorney in Boston and Philadelphia.
Up next, lesser-known ideas for summer fun around Boston. From a castle in Gloucester built by the father of the remote control to a model train set in the woods around Needham, that you can only find by GPS. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.